I don't know. I just feel like we all have really great aim until the second we put on these helmets.
I concur.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be a downer, but you guys do know what tomorrow is.
What's tomorrow?
Anniversary of the Death Star.
The Death Star?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. It's been a year already. Yeah. Man, it's such a huge thing, and all it took was a couple X-Wings to take it down.
Yeah. You guys remember where you were when it happened?
Yeah, I remember I was in Coruscant in training, waiting to hear some friends made it out. And, of course they didn't, because,
it blew up and evaporated.
Yeah, like a big, colorful firecracker. No one was getting out of there.
You guys know I was actually on my way to the Death Star that morning.
Yeah, get out of here.
No.
Yeah.
Forgot to set my alarm, got caught in space traffic. If it hadn't been for that space traffic.
Well, you can't think about that. You can't think about that, you're going to drive yourself crazy.
I'd be dead. I'd be dead.
Yeah, it's just so eerie. And you look at that part of the galaxy where the Death Star used to be, and it's just nothing.
Yeah. Still waiting on that memorial. Right now it's just
a little space garden.
Oh, the space garden, yeah. I hear they're going to build a new one, though. It's going to be almost as big.
Yeah, eight times as big.
Haven't we learned anything?
I mean, if you don't rebuild, the Jedi's win.
Jedi's. I'll tell you something. They hate our way of life.
Now, just because someone believes in the Force doesn't mean they're going to go blow up a space station,
all
right?
Yeah, maybe. Listen, we have all of this technology, right? We can't find Luke Skywalker. One guy.
You got a point.
Hiding out in a cave somewhere in Dagobah.
You know, honestly, I just think Palpatine knew all along. And he let it happen just to justify going to Hoth.
Here we go.
No, I'm serious. What? Darth Vader happens to be in a TIE fighter when the whole thing goes down, please. Come on.
All right.
Now, here we go. I read the engineering. Okay? There was no way one X-Wing could have taken this thing out.
Okay.
No way. It had to be a controlled demolition.
Connor, nobody wants to hear this.
You're blind. You are blind, sir. You're blind.
Whatever.
You're all a bunch of drones.
Hey, keep your voice down.
Your drones, especially the drones.
Coolest.
Here, have a drink.
You guys want another round?
Nah, we're fine.
You want another round?
Yeah, you know what? Sure, actually, you can keep coming. I think
that'd be great.
And now, coming to you not exactly live from
the cliffs of insanity,
a man who needs no introduction. That international man of geekery, that intrepid arch-geekologist, Indiana Jim.
Don't tell me you've never heard of me.
I'll explain.
And I'll use small words so that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon. I'll never be your hometown hero. I guess that's just the way that it goes.
Entertained in all the courts of Europe and speak a ready wit in their every tongue.
I told you I was famous.
Well, would you looky here? What showed up in your podcatcher? Yes, it's me, Indiana Jim. Always show up when you least expect it. And you know, it's never one of those moments where you go, bonus! Indiana Jim is here! Usually it's like, oh, great, what are we in for now? But, no, seriously, it's okay. I understand the sentiment because I usually say that when I look in the mirror. Ugh, what is that? Oh, dear God, what is that thing? Right? From Princess Bride? Sure, you know the one. So I'm here, and I got oodles of stuff to talk about. If you want to get in touch with me, you can email podcast@indianajim.net. I believe the mailbox is sufficiently empty. I do have some issues with that occasionally, but it should be all wrapped up because I expect that my deleted messages would get purged every once in a while. No. Even if my trash is full, that means my mailbox is full and I can't get anything. So I'm like, well, I deleted all these emails. There's nothing in there. Why is it still full? Yeah, trash. Gotta empty the trash. But anyway, if you'd like to call a voicemail, 206-666-2826. I still don't know what that stands for. But right now I think I'm going to go with the 666 should stand for I mean, because ooh, well, we could do ooh. Let's see, 3 O's, 2 8 2 6 C U B O See you body odor? See your body? No. No. I'm an all-terrain assault man. Yes, at am. So, ooh, at am. Yes. 206, ooh, at am. Oh. Yeah, so anyway, I've been enjoying this little show you may have heard of. Maybe you haven't. I don't know. It's called Firefly. They made a movie out of it called Serenity. And it's a little known product from a guy named Joss Whedon. And, you know, I always knew I love that show. But you know what? Now it's like, I really love that Goram show. You know what I mean? It's just that good. And I wish I knew some Chao Chien something or other, but I don't know any Chinese. So I'm not one of those official brown coats yet, but I'm getting darn close. And I see now, I think, the attraction that show has for the brown coats. It's every bit what Star Wars was. It really is. And it's just that good. Not necessarily as a mythos, just as a, not even really as a universe. I guess just as a metaphor, I guess. It, you know, it doesn't have the Force, and there's no mystical energy field controls my destiny, you know what I mean? As I've seen it written, Joss Whedon said, hey, let's make a TV show for Han Solo, you know? And I'm playing with my dials here, so if my voice tone changes, it's because I'm trying to see what different workings I can concoct from this thing. Make my voice sound a little better and maybe come in a little better. So, hey, that sounds better. What was I going to say? Just the one-liners in this show are classic. I mean, here's what happened with me and Firefly. Firefly comes on Fox, obviously. And I was watching the special features after the series and how it really came about, the reason that Fox decided to jump in the middle of the action, because that was Fox's modus operandi, is we want to throw you right in the middle of the action and catch you up later. It's good in theory. The reason they didn't like the pilot, I guess, kind of. They didn't like how the pilot just kind of slowly brings you into who these people are. And I'll be the first to tell you, it moves slow. But see, Joss, I think, approaches television differently than a lot of TV producers. And I'm not sure how Buffy does this, and I'm not sure how Dollhouse has done this. I think Fox, with Dollhouse, has taken their time. You know, they learned the lesson of what they did before. They know that Joss Whedon is going to create an incredible following with the stuff that he puts out. And just look at Buffy, look at Angel, look at Dr. Horrible, look at Firefly, and Dollhouse now. Joss knows how to connect with, I think, the intelligent viewer, okay? Joss struggles connecting with the average Joe out there that just wants to come home, watch King of Queens, eat dinner, and go to bed. Or stay up and watch, you know, Conan or whatever. Not that Conan's bad, but you know what I'm saying. You have to have some modicum, number one, of intelligence. Number two, a grasp of your own human nature. And I know this is getting deep, but you also have to understand depth, and you have to have patience. You have to be able to handle going deeper than the average bear with a Joss Whedon production. Dr. Horrible, not so much, okay? That's straight comedy. But with Firefly, there really is, you know, each episode, it seems, centers on one particular character, and you learn facets of one particular character's makeup. And so the problem that Fox had was they jumped in right in the middle of the action, and everything is disjointed because everything connects to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing, okay? Star Trek was episodic, yet it also had a larger arc, it seemed. Most of the series had a larger arc. There was character growth over the span of the series. And the problem with Firefly is I don't think enough people early on got it. Because obviously the Western thing in space was probably the biggest hurdle for most people. Now, the issue is that first pilot episode, if that was the first thing people saw, much better connection. And I know you've probably heard this rehashed a million times. But anyway, the point is for me, I'm very, very sad now. I was disappointed before because I had tuned in, you know, let's go back to where I was starting this conversation. When Firefly first came out, I caught a few episodes every now and then. And I loved it. I loved the Western in space thing because I identified with Westerns, I still do, and I also identify with, of course, science fiction. And it was the anti-Star Trek. And I think that's kind of the way Joss seems to put it, too. It wasn't, you know, it was just regular people come up out of our Earth civilization. We expand to the planets, and there's this war, and it's all human interaction. And so I saw the movie Serenity before I watched the series again. And it was difficult to get into Serenity at first. Don't get me wrong, I liked it. I enjoyed it. It was a fun movie. But now, having watched the series, it's so much easier. It's like people have said, it's basically season two in the form of a feature film. And I'm very, very sad now. I feel the sadness of Firefly being canceled. You know, I feel the agony of Joss not being able to finish off that first season and really bring it about the way he wanted to bring it about. And I hope and I pray, along with the other Browncoats, that perhaps the success of Dollhouse will lead to a resurgence of Firefly or a reimagining. You know, that would bring it back, and maybe not to TV, but maybe another feature. Maybe just TV, you know? Gosh, there's so much potential that a network has to tap there. Unfortunately, networks are stupid. So perhaps Firefly will come about in another way. You know what would be really good? I think one of the pay-per-view cable networks, like HBO or Showtime, one of these would be able to make it work. Look at Psych. Okay, that's another show I was going to bring up, but I deleted it off my list, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. Psych on USA probably doesn't have the biggest ratings, but USA has stuck with it. And it's one of USA's more popular shows alongside Monk, which is ending now. You know, it wouldn't have done well on network. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think NBC tried it out on network. But Psych is one of those, it has the humor that Firefly had. Obviously, a completely different genre, but very well done, and something that doesn't require a huge budget. And that probably is the biggest difference, is the budget, because the budget for the special effects for Firefly would be hugely different. But I recommend, if you're a big fan of Firefly, but not a big fan of Dollhouse, I would suggest giving Dollhouse your time. And obviously, you know, if you're a fan of Firefly, you're probably a fan of Joss. And, of course, the support for Dollhouse can only improve the chances of seeing more of Firefly, because you know that the cast wants to do more of it. And I think the way Joss ended Serenity, with the death of Wash, with the death of Shepherd Book, but then the bringing on of Inara back to the crew of the ship, you know, I think there's something there. And I really, really like the potential for exploration with River's character. There's just so much more there. You know there has to be more there. And, you know, I look forward to the day, perhaps, when those adventures may continue. But for now, we're just going to sit aside. So count me in among the Browncoats, because that show just resonates so much with me. And Greg Edmondson with the score, just an amazing job with that. Just the way he connects with people in a just the emotion of the music is just perfect. So anyway, that's enough about that. The book is done. Yay, the book is done. The Last Guardians. And I still may change the title, but But I'm going to stick with it for now. Anyway, that book is done, and I am currently outlining. I'm going through with a spreadsheet and basically going a column for a chapter, then a column for a scene, then a column for a character along with the voices, and what sound effects and or music I want to put in the scene. I'm still debating whether or not, you know, how much production I want to put into it. I'm aiming somewhere between Scott Sigler? Wow. I'm aiming somewhere between Scott Sigler and P.G. Holyfield. You know, Scott Sigler, very limited production. I think of Nocturnal, the occasional sound effect, whereas P.G.'s got more of the audio drama-ness to it. I'm not really comfortable doing a straight read because there's so many voices in here, and I really, really want to bring some actors in and do some character voices and just kind of provide some ambiance during the dialogue, because I just think it's going to just, I don't know, enhance it. You know what I mean? I really believe that. So the book is done. I will be casting soon. There will be casting notices. Here's the key. This will be audition based. the occasional voice that I already know and I know what those people can do may not have to audition, but I am going to be auditioning some of the bigger roles because podcasters are great, and they always come through in a pinch, and even people that just listen to podcasts, and some of the guest voices that came in on the Star Wars. But, see, I want to establish something of my own, and this is my first chance to do that. Star Wars, obviously not my own. So this is my first chance to really establish something that is mine, and I want to come in with guns blazing. I want this thing to be as perfect as possible. That means Voice Casting Alliance message board. That means the Galactic Senate, where we get a lot of our Star Wars talent from. That means auditioning, you know, through my website with Twitter and all that. Just announcing that through Facebook. I want to get as many auditions as I can to get the best voices possible. And even the minor voices. If I cast somebody as one role, I'll probably ask them to do a minor voice, because even the minor voices, I want them, when they come in, to be just perfect. And if I have a voice that kind of just, the person doesn't bring the drama to it, that's the thing about podcasters. We're used to talking like this. We're not really used to being dramatic. There's a difference between public speaking and acting. A huge difference. And so I'm going to be very, very strict with this. So it's not just, hey, I'll do a voice for you. Okay, you're in. It's not going to work like that. And the best voices will be in. And that's just how I have to do it. And there will sure be some podcasters that get in on this. I'm thinking there's probably something for P.G. Holyfield or Chris Lester or T. Morris or Philippa Ballantyne or any number of those. May Breakall will probably kill me if I don't use something with her. So we'll see how that goes with May. I don't mean anything by it. I just, you know, May, I just like picking on her. So maybe the Vicar, perhaps some of these people that were in Star Wars, Codename Starkeeper, that bring some more of the dramatic heft to their roles. And I'm just going to be the narrator. So I'm not doing any character voices. I want to do simply the narration. I might put in a few ancillary voices because I can change my voice up a little bit. But primarily, I'm going to be the narrator, and I'd like to get one single announcer for my opening, you know, when, you know, last week's episode or whatever, that, you know what I mean, the story so far guy. I want that to be one guy, and I'm leaning towards Grail Wolf, who probably doesn't listen to my podcast, but it's okay, either him or Rick Stringer, a la P.G. Holyfield. But you know who I really like? The Celtic Myth podcast, I think that's what it is. That guy with the Irish accent would be perfect, but you know, we'll see how that goes. Anyway, that's enough about that. Stay tuned for more. So I'm going to bring you a promo now, and after this promo, we're going to check the headlines over at Slice of Sci-Fi, so stay tuned.
This is Captain Darren Payne of the Iron Blood. If you've ever been conflicted by issues like fudging the rules, metagaming, power gaming, or anything else that can happen in a role-playing game, come and listen to The Great Debate. Tis an RPG podcast wherein player characters like myself go head-to-head over issues just like these. So if you want to hear PCs from different game settings cross intellectual cutlasses with each other, check it out at www.rpgdebate.com. And may you never be cast adrift from the gaming table again.
Ness Relevant is living on borrowed time. Molecular implosion, cellular degeneration, and dangerous men are but a few of the perils faced by the friendly and unassuming forensic photographer. His quiet bachelorhood is interrupted when he receives an innocent-looking device in the mail from a friend and former college professor. Ness unexpectedly finds himself embroiled in events driven by his friend's success. This device is the focal point of a struggle that could overturn the whole world should Ness or his friend's invention fall prey to greedy men. Before his time runs out, Ness must travel back to an uncomfortable past to prevent an unthinkable future. Borrowed Time is an action-adventure story written and performed by Keith Hughes. This free audiobook is now available at penslinger.com, podiobooks.com, and on iTunes. Subscribe now or visit penslinger.com for more information. In the race for the future, time has no boundaries.
We're doing something new now at the Adventures of Indiana Jim. Yes, we, as in myself. And we're taking a look at some of the recent headlines from sliceofsci-fi.com. And one of these is rather old. Well, I don't know, it's September 16th, so it's not that old. But it says the cast for the big screen version of The A-Team is starting to take shape. You may recall that on a previous episode, we brought you news that actor Liam Neeson and Bradley Cooper had been cast as John Hannibal Smith and Templeton Faceman Peck, respectively. I like Bradley Cooper as Face. You know, he's not as smooth as Dirk Benedict. You know, he doesn't have that baby face like Dirk Benedict had. But I think he's going to be good. I think he fits that sort of debonair kind of movie star sort of look. And Liam Neeson as Hannibal, that ought to be interesting. Liam Neeson can do comedy. If you've ever seen Gunshy, just the man is brilliant and can do practically anything. And I can't wait to get to see that. But they've also added Quentin Jackson, who's a UFC fighter known as Rampage, take on the role as B.A. Baracus. And taking a look at him, I think he's going to be perfect for it. And from my buddy, the Bengals fan, Kevin Willis, he is also a fighter, follower of the whole, you know, mixed martial arts stuff, and said that Quentin Jackson gave up a hometown billing in Memphis, basically a card that probably would have paid him seven figures, which was a, what did he call it? Not elimination. Maybe it was an eliminator that would have set him up for another seven-figure title fight. So he would have cleared at least $2 million inside of 4 months, he says. And he gave that up to be in the A-Team. And, you know, maybe he gave that up. I don't know. Maybe he can fit it in, but we'll see. Apparently, though, my buddy, he knows these things, so I usually trust him on that. So, anyway, I don't care, man. It's the A-Team. I'll take the A-Team over UFC any day. But it also says actors Jessica Biel and Charlto Copley from District 9 are negotiating to join the cast. And Copley would be Murdoch on there. Biel would play the part of the ex-love of Cooper's character, Faceman, the general pursuing the team, according to Variety. What, the general? Probably the daughter of the general pursuing. I think that's probably what that's supposed to say. Anyway, I thought that was interesting. Apparently, Nicolas Cage has left the Green Hornet. Gee, I wonder why, because Seth Rogen was in it. Nothing against Seth Rogen, but it seems to me that the only way they could go with that is for the funny. And for some reason, the Green Hornet doesn't strike me as going for the funny. As I recall, the Green Hornet was a lot similar to the TV series Batman, though a little less cheese. Well, at least less purple tights, let's just put it that way. And, of course, had Bruce Lee as Kato. And I don't see how going with Seth Rogen in this can be anything but stupid. But maybe he's going for a dramatic role? I don't know. I like Seth Rogen, and maybe he's trying to pull a Jim Carrey here. But I don't know. I just don't see it. So I don't really blame Nicolas Cage for leaving. He's been replaced by actor Christoph Waltz, who can be seen in Inglourious Basterds from Quentin Tarantino. Let's see. There was a poll recently. Which genre series are you most looking forward to? And there was a lot of options. There was Heroes, Vampire Diaries, Supernatural, Smallville, Dollhouse, Stargate Universe, Flash Forward. I'm not looking forward to any of them. Bring back Chuck Now, Sanctuary, V, and Fringe. My vote, I didn't really vote. I voted for I'm not looking forward to any of them because the genre series I'm most looking forward to is the HBO Game of Thrones, which doesn't even start filming the pilot, I think, until October, from what Michael Hickerson is telling me. And, you know, it's the only thing on the slate that I can say, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Because you know me, I'm Star Wars, I'm space opera guy, I'm, you know, give me spaceships and lasers and all this kind of stuff. And of course, I also voted bring back Firefly now, but that wasn't an actual choice. I just wrote it in the comments for obvious reasons previously mentioned. There is an interview with AMC with the author of the novel Flash Forward, Robert J. Sawyer. Now, I did not know, seeing the previews, that this was a Robert J. Sawyer vehicle. I know Robert J. Sawyer is widely respected and known as one of the better sci-fi authors out there. I'm not totally interested in the series upcoming, but I thought it was interesting. And you can go to, well, let's see, you can go to sliceofsci-fi.com and find that headline. He mentioned something about how George Lucas preempted his sci-fi series. I don't know how he did that. It doesn't say in the preview here. I didn't read the whole blog post, so, but you can go check it out over there. Depp loses interest in Pirates 4. Actor Johnny Depp has lost some of his enthusiasm to reprise his Oscar-nominated roles as Captain Jack Sparrow in the upcoming Pirates of the Caribbean 4, according to 411 Mania. Part of that may be the recent departure of Disney executive and longtime chairman Dick Cook. Cook departed Friday, according to reports. Cook and Depp were friends, and when Disney was initially reticent about Depp's take on Sparrow in the first movie, Cook stepped up to defend him. Depp's work won over critics and audiences, catapulting the original to huge box office success. Now with Cook gone, Depp says his enthusiasm for the upcoming fourth installment has diminished. Depp added that while he has a deal in place for the next Pirates flick, it will depend heavily on the script now because his enthusiasm has dropped due to the Cook situation. Here's a quote from the ever-quotable oddball Johnny Depp says, "There's a fissure, a crack in my enthusiasm at the moment. It was all born in Cook's office. It was all born in his office. There's a fissure in his enthusiasm." Yes, fissure. 10 points to Johnny Depp for throwing fissure, that's not spelled F-I-S-H-E-R, in a casual little interview there. So, brilliant. Not sure what that's going to mean. I know Johnny Depp likes to say these things to get things to go his way. And usually he plays it about right in these things, I believe. Johnny Depp is, you know, one of the better actors out there. And, you know, if you want this franchise to keep going for a fourth movie, you darn well better make Johnny Depp happy, okay? If you don't make Jack Sparrow happy, you have no movie, period. You cannot, simply cannot bring anyone else on as Captain Jack Sparrow. And you cannot have a Pirates of the Caribbean movie now without Captain Jack Sparrow. It just won't work. Jeffrey Rush as, what's his face? Yeah, whatever. Barbossa. He's not going to cut it. You have to have Jack Sparrow if you're going to have this movie. So I think they have to do everything they can to make sure Johnny Depp is happy. Otherwise, they're not going to have this movie.
And if they do have this movie, it's going to bomb. And it will be an insult to the franchise that is Pirates of the Caribbean. Now, I know a lot of people say, well, they kind of ruined it themselves because the last two movies were crap. And they really weren't, okay? You have to really, with these, you have to take them all together because they don't work if you don't. There's too much bridging in the second movie. You know, T. Morris likes to say that they forgot how to have fun with a pirate movie. And yes, he's right. If you take it by itself, it's really quite a good epic fantasy story. It's not really a pirate story once you add in 2 and 3. The first movie is just balls-to-the-wall pirate adventure. The second and third, yeah, they went a little heavy, I think, with the mythology and the supernatural bits with Davy Jones. And yes, they really missed out on having the big epic sea battle with all the pirate ships going at it together. I think they had an idea. They wanted to make this epic, and then all of a sudden, hey, we need a whole lot more special effects shots to get this done. Let's just have a three-way battle between these three. But I think the whole wedding thing on the deck of the ship was hilarious and was just awesome. I think the emotion that it gets to between Will and Elizabeth is awesome. I think the second movie ends really well with Jeffrey Rush coming down the stairs and Barbossa's been resurrected. I just, as a whole, I love the Pirates franchise, and I really would like to see another, you know, a Jack Sparrow-centric adventure that doesn't deal with all the East India Company and the Davy Jones and all that stuff. I just really, really would love to see a fourth one to sort of get that fun back to wrap it up, sort of as bookends, you know what I mean? So anyway, that's my take on the Slice of Sci-Fi headlines, and you can go there to sliceofscifi.com and read them yourself, man. They have stuff every 20 minutes, or, you know, three or four blog posts at a time. So they usually keep the headlines coming, and they're really the number one place for me to get my headlines on stuff that's coming out and stuff that's going on in the genre. Now, what I'd like to present to you is a preview of Star Wars In the Shadows. Now, I play Emperor Palpatine and Prince Shizor of the Black Sun Company. Now, the Shizor take was all Danny Pépin, who is French, and he basically gave me what he wanted for Shizor, and I tried to deliver exactly what he asked for. So it's not like it's my take on Shizor. I never heard the Shadows of the Empire audiobook. I never read the book. I didn't partake in any of the stuff for that book or that story. But here I am in this audio drama, and the Palpatine is all me. I tried as much as possible to get down to Ian McDiarmid. And so here we have a preview scene with, I believe, Palpatine and Vader from Star Wars In the Shadows.
Welcome back, Lord Vader.
The two Jedi have been killed, Master. They did not offer much resistance.
Good. More Jedi have escaped the Purge than I expected. We must wipe them out completely if we are to maintain order in the galaxy. A single Jedi may be able to rebuild the Republic and destroy what the Sith have worked so hard for during the last 1,000 years. I have foreseen it.
Eyewitness reports of Force user activity are rare. The remaining Jedi are well hidden. But I will seek them out and destroy them all.
We cannot underestimate the surviving Jedi. The future is clouded. We must be prepared. The dark side has enlightened me. We will be able to escape death as I have promised. Any news from Grand Moff Tarkin?
The Death Star is almost ready for launch, but key components were destroyed during a rebel attack on the latest convoy. The station will not be hyperspace capable for weeks. The Organas are behind this attack.
But they have diplomatic immunity. Patience, Lord Vader. Soon I will dismantle the Senate. Senator Organa and all the Rebel Alliance leaders will be at our mercy.
The Rebels' lack of funding makes them weak, but the death of Starkiller has greatly motivated them.
This is your failure, Vader. You found and trained the boy. Obviously, you did not raise him as a true servant of the dark side.
He was weak, my master.
Weak, you say? But he would have killed you if he hadn't turned to the light. You are not as strong as you once were, Vader.
Yes, master.
Be mindful of your feelings, my old friend. They betray you.
And there you have it, the preview scene, featuring myself as Emperor Palpatine and Sean Crosby, fan extraordinaire, as Darth Vader. Doing a pretty good job, I think. He seems to have gotten the cadence down pretty good. I like the sound of it. So, for more information on Star Wars in the Shadows, you can go to creativeaudioscape.com to check out all the news posts on the blog there. You can find Danny Pepin on Twitter. I think that's how you pronounce it. Twitter.com/creativeaudiosc and also Danny Pepin. Pepin. I don't know. It's hard to pronounce this French. DanyPepin. He's a good guy. Now, the release schedule, is as follows. September 20th, we had the release of the official trailer. So, if you go to creativeaudioscape.com/audiodrama/swits_trailer.mp3, that's the file. And I'll have it in the show notes, of course. And then October 4th is episode 1, Criminal Entanglements. And it's about a bi-weekly release there. So, you'll have more information as it is released. And after it's finished its run, I will probably rerun it here. And shortly, we will begin the run of Conquest of the Empire by Joe Harrison. So stay tuned for that. That ought to be some serious fun for you guys who enjoyed Starkeeper. I think you'll enjoy Conquest of the Empire as well. Now, there was a blog post recently, and this will be our last bit of content for the episode. Blog post recently from Men with Pens. And, of course, you can hear my mouse clicky-clicky, clicky-clicky, click-clicky-clicky-clicky, which, of course, means I'm searching in vain for what I'm looking for. Here it is, menwithpens.ca. And this link came from the Twitter account of Scott Roche, also known as Spiritual Tramp on Twitter. The blog post is entitled Screw Community. All right, this is going to be heartwarming. Community is a word you'll hear all over the internet. You're a part of a community on Twitter. Blog networks are a community. Your blog's comment section is a community. The whole blogosphere is a community. You'll also hear that you should be part of these communities. You should be contributing. You should be giving others a leg up. Do your part. Join in. Show that community spirit. But I've been wondering lately exactly what is this community everyone's talking about? Who is in this community? What does being a community mean? What are we all supposed to be working towards? And who started this community in the first place? And how did I suddenly become obligated to it? I bet a lot of you have that blank look on your faces right now. Well, community, you know, the good of all. And, well, we're working towards building a community, James, you know. No, I don't know. Someone explain it to me. I'd be much obliged. What is the blogging community? No one has been able to give me a satisfactory answer to this question yet. They sure can tell me when I'm not being an active member of the blogging community, though. I have people every day asking me for donations, free support, cut rates, volunteer work, blog posts written for no pay, free copy, free design, free marketing, free promotion for the community. And if I don't accept these requests, many of which come from people I have never even heard of before they came to me with their handout, I'm suddenly accused of not, quote, contributing to the community. When did I become the bad guy just because I won't give a complete stranger free stuff? What did I do to deserve a guilt trip? Many of these people have a self-assured attitude, too. They really think they have the right to ask for free goods. They feel they deserve it. They're shocked when I decline. They're hurt and dismayed. They're disappointed. How could you, James? How could you betray the community? Look, I think that what we have here is a definition breakdown. Betrayal is turning your back on something you promised to uphold. If I ever made a promise to uphold the blogging community's needs, I'd like to see the transcript of that press conference. Screw community, I say. Now, I'm not saying that all communities aren't worth the effort. Don't get up in arms there. I've had great experiences contributing to my local community, for instance. Right now, it's desperately trying to get better playground equipment for its parks. I know what's at stake. X dollars gets X equipment, and if I contribute, my kid gets a great place to play, and I get a great place to read a book on a bench in the sun. Awesome. My local community doesn't make me feel guilty if I don't contribute. No one comes to ask for my money or my time, either. They put an ad in the paper. Contribute or not, if you like the cause. I don't have an obligation to fork out because I live in this town. I could ignore the whole idea completely if I wanted, and I'd still be seen as a fine, upstanding member of the community. Of course, I'd feel bad if I used the park anyway when I could have helped out. They just gave me something for free. I feel like I should give back to those guys. We'll help each other out. It'll be great. So what does the blogging community give back? And if you'd like to read the rest of this blog article, I'm not going to read the whole thing here, but it's a very interesting point. You can go to menwithpens.ca, and over on the right-hand sidebar, if you go down to recent posts there, you'll see Screw Community. And it's really thought-provoking, because I've run across this before. Well, not really specifically. I've never had anybody ask me for free stuff. I mean, yeah, we've had, you know, people solicit writers for anthologies, for instance. That's cool. You want to do it? It's great. It's not like, hey, help me out. It's like, hey, I'm doing this. Would you like to be a part of it? Yes or no? You know, I wouldn't say guys like P.G. Holyfield are like, write for Tales of the Children so that I can be more popular. It's not how I see it. It is a marketing ploy, yes, but it's not for the sake of community. Everybody who's getting into it knows it's for P.G. Holyfield. You're not betraying the community if you don't write a story for him. And I told him I would, and I can't. I can't. It's just not working. I don't know what it is about jumping in someone else's world. It's just very difficult to write in. Unless it's George Lucas's world, apparently, because I do that fairly well, I guess. So we do have this sense of obligation where, you know, we play each other's promos. And we link to each other's podcasts, and we retweet each other's tweets, and the day that it becomes obligatory to do something for someone is the day that I think I'd like to bow out, just like this fella said. But let me know what you think. This episode's getting a little long, so I'm going to wrap it up here. I think I've jawed your ear off enough. If you'd like to email me, please email podcast@indianagym.net. Or you can call the voicemail 206-666-2826 or go to podcast.indianajim.net and leave a comment on the blog. So I'm Indiana Jim, and I guess until the next episode, this is me saying until the next episode. This is me saying until the next episode. Wait, that's kind of circular, isn't it?